following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
You know, if motivational speakers had catchphrases, Jim Rohn's would be, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." Some of you may have heard that one before. That's another way of saying that our relationships have a huge impact on who we are. That can work for good, and it can work for not so good. As another old saying goes, it's hard to soar like an eagle when you hang around with a bunch of turkeys. In other words, the people that you avoid can be just as important as the people you hang with. Now, by avoid, I mean, you can't get away from everybody, but there are some people that we need to kind of keep at arm's length, that we need to have some healthy boundaries against to keep them from having a negative influence on our lives. The book of Proverbs has a lot of great practical advice for guiding our relationships. Proverbs is, if you're not aware, it's a collection of short, pithy sayings in the Bible that describe generally applicable observations that can increase our chances for living a successful, happy life. All of these observations revolve around the theme of giving the proper respect both to God and to God's commandments, the principles that He has built into His creation. When we live in harmony with those principles, then things tend to go a little smoother. It doesn't mean we eliminate all problems, but we tend to make it through a little smoother than if we live in opposition to those principles. Just a little personal note. I love the book of Proverbs. It has 31 chapters. In fact, I try to read a chapter each day, which works out pretty well because there's 31 chapters. Now, the people who compiled Proverbs didn't really have that in mind. They lived under a lunar calendar, which only has about 29 days. And plus, the chapter divisions that we have in our modern Bibles, those were put in later to help study. Those weren't there originally. But you know, you take a chapter a day in Proverbs, it pretty much works out a chapter a day through the month. You can read the whole book in a month's time. I encourage you, if you never tried that before, to try it. It's a great way to kind of add some wisdom and some insight into your day. And one of the best parts about Proverbs is the advice it gives us on our relationships. When it comes to our relationships, Proverbs 26 in particular warns us against four types of people that you don't want to be around. Four types of people you kind of want to keep at arm's length. So let's go through those four people and maybe learn how to protect ourselves from their influence. First of all, the first person you want to avoid is the fool. And we read about the fool in Proverbs 26 verses 1 through 12. Now, the fool is a pretty common antagonist in the book of Proverbs. In fact, we're going to spend several minutes right now kind of examining the foolish person, what the Bible considers a foolish person, because that kind of forms the foundation all these others are offshoots of. At the core of all of our hang-ups, it tends to be a little bit of foolishness, at least as the Bible interprets it. The whole book of Proverbs basically is a contrast between the way of foolishness in life and the way of wisdom in life. And the particular Hebrew word that's used here in Proverbs 26 is by far the most common of the three words used in Proverbs for fool. It's the word kasil, and it literally means a stupid, arrogant simpleton. Now, underline that word arrogant, because that's going to come into pretty heavy play here. Throughout Proverbs, as well as the book of Psalms, a fool is described as one who lacks the proper respect for God and the proper respect for God's commands. As we're told in Psalm 14, verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, "There is no God." That is a foolish person, according to the Bible. A person who lives as if God doesn't exist. In Proverbs 1, verse 7, is in the introduction to this book, we're told the fear of the Lord, or the reverence of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. In other words, if wisdom is centered on reverence for God, and the opposite of wisdom is foolishness, then to reject God is the most foolish thing a person can do. The same thought carries on into the New Testament as well. That's why Paul can write in Romans 1, verses 21 and 23, when he talks about the result of human impiety, of failing to give God the proper weight. He says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. But they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image of the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-legged animals and crawling creatures." Paul's point there is, if you don't worship God, you're still going to worship something. Even if it's your own arrogance. Okay? Again, that pride, that arrogance come into play there. Isn't it interesting in our day when so many people are trying to push religion out of the public square, they replace it with a quasi-religious movement that is much more legalistic and much more fundamentalist than just about anything that Christianity has ever dreamed of. I'm talking about political correctness. It's a very cruel religion to be subject to. But that's what happens when you remove God from the equation, when you try to live as if God doesn't exist, and you try to put something else in the place of God. Now, Proverbs 26 sets out reasons for keeping such a person at a distance. First of all, a foolish person, don't take that person seriously. In verse 1 and verse 2, we're told, "Like snow in summer and like rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. Like a sparrow in its flitting, like a swallow in its flying, so a curse without cause does not alight." In other words, taking a fool seriously is about as absurd as expecting snow time in the summer. Most of you have probably seen the movie Frozen, right? A little Olaf, a little magic snowman, who all he wants to do is spend a summer day at the beach. And nobody has the heart to tell him what's going to happen if his dream comes true. Yeah, you wouldn't expect snow in the summertime. Likewise, you wouldn't want to see rain at the harvest time. Rain's supposed to be for the growing season. If you have rain in the harvest time, then it's going to prevent you from harvesting the crops, and the crops are going to rot and die on the vine. So it's absurd. But that's the same thing as taking a foolish person and giving them weight or taking them seriously. He goes in verse 2, like he says, if a fool criticizes you, his words carry about as much weight as a little bird that's flitting around. Okay? This is a great reminder that if somebody is criticizing you, if somebody's insulting you, a good way to insulate yourself against that is to conduct yourself normally in such a way that if somebody hears that criticism, they're not going to believe it. They say, that doesn't sound like the person I know. That's why it's important for us to live as people of integrity. Because there, fools are going to criticize. Haters are going to hate. But you want to conduct yourself in such a way that when they throw those insults, they bounce right off. Because people know that's not who you really are. Like a bird, a fool's words may touch you briefly. But if you're a person of integrity, they will have no lasting impact. We're also encouraged, don't try to reason with a fool. In verse 3, a whip is for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the back of fools. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will also be like him. Answer a fool as his folly deserves, that he may not be wise in his own eyes. People who are living foolishly tend to only understand the hardest discipline. Okay? That's one of the hallmarks of being a fool, is you can't learn from your mistakes. Wisdom, well, actually, it's smart to learn from your own mistakes. The really wise person learns from other people's mistakes. Okay, that's how you know you're really wise, when you say, okay, I see that happened over there. I don't want anything to do with that. But there's some people that just don't seem to learn. They're so stubborn, they're so arrogant, they're so set in their ways. They keep butting their head up against the same wall over and over again. And it takes something really major to wake them up and get their attention. And we don't want to be people like that. You really don't want to hang around people like that. Arguing with a person like that is seldom a good thing. Okay? Now, at first glance, verses 4 and 5 do appear a little contradictory. Verse 4 seems to warn against arguing with a fool because bystanders won't be able to tell you apart. But verse 5 seems to suggest that sometimes you need to step in and engage a fool because he needs to be cut down to size, for he can cause too much trouble. Now, this mixed signal has puzzled scholars for centuries. I kind of think that what's going on here, the point is by putting these two together, is to show that sometimes it is necessary to confront a person like this, but it is seldom a winning proposition. You're not going to come out unscathed, even when you have to do it. So it's best to try to avoid that situation. Another way to handle people like this, don't trust a foolish person with responsibility. In verse 6, he cuts off his own feet and drinks violence who sends a message by the hand of a fool. Like the legs which are useless to the lame, so a proverb is in the mouth of fools. Like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. Like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. When you entrust a task to a foolish person, you're only hurting yourself. By definition, fools are incapable of acting wisely. When you give responsibility to a person like this, you're only setting up the potential for disaster. This is illustrated in three very vivid images here. In verse 8, giving the idea here of the binding the stone in a sling, that's kind of like tossing around a loaded gun. You know, one of the first things they teach you in firearm safety is you don't point the business end of that weapon at something you're not willing to shoot, right? And yet, you know, somebody who's careless, they just kind of wave it around, you know, and you know, that's foolish. Somebody's going to get hurt. Well, giving responsibility to a person who's not prepared to accept it is the same thing as waving around a loaded gun. The second illustration, this idea now, and the New American Standard translates it as like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard. The Hebrew here is really tricky. If you look at different translations, they're going to render it different ways. I think the one that probably comes closest, if you think of the idea of a branch that has a bunch of thorns on it, and you got to imagine a person who's intoxicated, just kind of stumbling around with that branch in their hand, and anybody that's in their way is liable to get scratched up with that thing. So that's what it's like to give a responsibility to a person who's not prepared to handle it wisely. And in the third one, in verse 10, the archer who wounds everyone, again, the idea of giving responsibility to somebody who is a fool is like just firing blindly into a crowd. Now, churches are guilty of this all the time. And we'd be wise to pay attention to these warnings. How many times have you ever heard somebody say something like, well, you know, he's a good guy, but he's not really living for the Lord right now. But, you know, maybe if we just gave him some responsibility, maybe if we gave him a job. Now, let me just back up and say for a moment, there is something to be said about helping people get assimilated in church by giving them something to do. Okay, one of the things that we strategically try to follow and taking steps to follow is to help people get integrated in a church by relationships and responsibilities. You know, help people get connected to other groups within the church, to build those relationships, and give them responsibilities, something to do. But people need to be matched up with those tasks based on their ability, their maturity, and their readiness. Okay? It's a little different than asking somebody to hand out bulletins as opposed to laying hands on them as a deacon. It's a big jump there. 1 Timothy 5:22 says, do not lay hands upon someone too hastily and thereby share responsibility for the sins of others. Keep yourself free from sin. And I have to admit, I've been guilty of that in the past too. You got a need? We have, you know, we're entering a season now where we're getting ready to start recruiting and getting volunteers in place for the fall. And sometimes you're under that pressure. I got a hole to fill. I got to fill it. Who's available? Who's just kind of wandering around here I can grab and put in this place just so I can get my chart filled? Well, folks, we need to be very, very careful that we put the right people with the right jobs and they're prepared and ready to handle those responsibilities. Because if you get the wrong person in the wrong job, it can cause all kinds of issues. And then the final thing that we're told here about the fool is, don't expect the fool to change. In verses 11 and 12, Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. Do you see a man who's wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Now, I love dogs. I've got a dog. I don't know how much you know about dogs, but dogs have this propensity to clean up after themselves. You know, if they throw up, they lick it up. They also do stuff that's even more gross than that. But I'm not going to ruin your lunch. But dogs like to clean them up. It's an instinct that they have, okay? It's gross, but it's part of their nature. Well, in the same way, foolish people are going to act foolishly. All right? It's part of their nature. And it's very, very hard for somebody who is determined to act in that way, who's determined to do their own thing and keep beating their head up against that wall. It's very, very hard to change that until they choose humility. They come to the point to say, you know what? This ain't working. I need to make some changes. One of the first steps to solving any problem is to first of all admit the problem's there, right? That's wisdom. To admit, I got a problem. And I need to take steps to correct the problem. I got to take some ownership. I got to take some responsibility. I have to make some changes in order to get out of this rut. But for some people, that's very, very hard to do because it goes against deeply ingrained patterns in their personality and in their behavior. So that's the first person we need to avoid. Avoid the fool. And that kind of forms the foundation for all these others, because in a way, each of these other things people we're going to talk about kind of builds off of that. The second person we're told to avoid or warned to avoid are the slackers. Avoid the slacker. Or is this in the New American Standard, it's translated the sluggard. Verse 13, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, a lion in the open square. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is weary of bringing it to his mouth again. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. So first off, we're told there in verse 13, verse 13, I'm sorry. We're reminded, slackers are always making excuses in order to avoid responsibility. This guy says, oh man, if I leave the house today, I could run into a hungry lion. I better not do that. They're not willing to take any risk. By contrast, people who actually do stuff take risk all the time. Tom Cheney is a church revitalization expert based down in Florida, and in his book, The Church Revitalizer is Change Agent, he makes this statement. I don't know if it's original with him, but he's the first person I ever heard it from. He says, you cannot steal second base while keeping your foot on first. You know, if you're going to make a difference, you got to step out and take some risk. Well, some people are just not going to do it. You know, they're going to make excuses to avoid taking that responsibility. It is also the nature of slackers to avoid effort. You know, a door on a hinge only swings two ways, right? Open, close, open, close. Well, there's some people, the only direction they move is turn around in bed. That's what the writer of Proverbs says. Maybe you know some people like that. Slackers refuse to take care of their own basic needs. Some people are so lazy, the way writer of Proverbs describes it, they stick their hand in a bowl, they can't bring it up to feed themselves. Just can't make the effort. Now, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I'm talking about, right? And the slacker, I mean, he thinks he is the smartest person of all. This verse here where it says, the sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. The number seven in the Bible is often used symbolically to refer to completeness or wholeness. And so really what he's saying here is the slacker thinks he's the smartest guy around, but actually, he is often the last to know. Everybody is smarter than this guy. Okay? That's how he's a fool. The other person you need to avoid, the third person, is the meddler. In verse 17, like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? Now, only a fool steps in to a fight that doesn't involve him or her. Okay? Now, hear me out here. This is not the same thing as stepping in to protect a defenseless person from being abused. That's totally legitimate. What I'm talking about here is the type of person who feels compelled to get involved in everybody else's business. You ever know anybody like that? Sticking your nose into other people's fights is as dangerous as grabbing a dog by both ears and going, because you got to remember, the other end's got teeth. Okay? You're going to get bit. You can't say, oh, I'm just joking around. Yeah, you're still going to get bit. Every once in a while, somebody will come to me about refereeing a family dispute. You know, in nearly every case, I politely decline. And I'm in good company. Jesus declined those things too. In Luke 12, verses 13 through 14, we read, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus looked at him, said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" See, what? A lot of times when people approach me about stuff like this, what they really want me to do is to step in and tell the other person to give in. Okay, they're trying to enlist me as their muscle. But as most police officers will tell you, one of the most dangerous situations you can be in is to answer a domestic disturbance call. And I've actually known officers who've lost their lives in that situation. Because sometimes what happens is you step in to try to be a help and you end up, everybody turns against you. That's not a healthy place to be. So I will, you know, if you come to me and you got a dispute going on, I will coach you, I will give you advice, but I'm not going to fight that battle for you, okay? You're going to have to take some responsibility for that. I will do what I can cheering you on from the sidelines. Sticking our noses into affairs that do not concern us is serious business. It's not just a joke. Most of us would save ourselves a lot of heartache by remembering the phrase, "Not my circus, not my monkeys." You can pray for people, you can give them advice, you can coach them, but sometimes we have to let people work things out on their own. And now, this person kind of is connected to the last person we're going to look at, because there are some people, the reason they inject themselves into other people's business is because it is a way of controlling and manipulating other people. It's a way of getting attention, either through control or, I mean, I've known some people that like to go around and stir up stuff so they can be the ones to ride in and save the day. Okay? Because the last person you want to avoid is the instigator. These verses describe the person who likes to stir the pot through manipulation and gossip and things like that. For example, one way to spot people like that is when they move on, things begin to settle down. Verse 19, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, verse 20, for lack of wood, the fire goes out. And when there's no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to a fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. So there are some people that stir stuff up, but if they're out of the picture, it's amazing how quickly things settle down. A skilled instigator can also present themselves with a positive face, but it's only a disguise for a corrupt heart. In verse 22, the words of the whisperer are like dainty morsels. They go down into the innermost parts of the body. Like an earthen vessel overlaid with silver dross or burning lips with a wicked heart. Some people will present themselves as your friend. They'll present themselves as, you know, trying to help. But then when you start digging down, you realize, wait a minute, there's a different agenda going on here. Listen, you can take some gold spray paint and spray Tupperware. It's still Tupperware. Okay? It's like putting silver on a clay pot. It's still a clay pot. There's something on the inside that's not right. Verse 24, he who hates disguises it with his lips. He lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Remember that number seven. This guy is completely corrupt. He is not there to be your friend. Though his hatred, what happens is a lot of times what's done in the shadows will eventually be revealed in the light. These people eventually trip themselves up and other people will begin to notice and put two and two together. You do this to enough people, they all start to get together and compare notes and say, wait a minute, something ain't right here. Because like we read in verse 26, so his hatred covers itself with guile, in other words, with cleverness. His wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. He who digs a pit will fall into it. And he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. If you find yourself dealing with a person like this, let me just give you some personal advice. Don't try to strike back. Okay? What you do is you try to build some boundaries. And you turn them over to the Lord. You let the Lord deal with them. Because I guarantee you, the Lord is a lot more adept at dealing with people like this than you and I are. I've witnessed it happen. And a lot of times, the little webs they weave end up trapping them. Now, there's four types of people the writer of Proverbs encourages us to avoid or keep at a healthy distance. But here's another thing we can learn from this, okay? These behavioral patterns are all, not only are they four types of people you want to avoid, you don't want to be with, they're also four types of people you don't want to be. Okay? Because it's so easy for us to sit back and look at the flaws of somebody else and not take a look in the mirror. Jesus warned against pointing out the flaws of others without dealing with our own. In Matthew 7, the Sermon on the Mount, verses 3 through 5, Jesus said, "Why do you look at the speck that's in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite! First take the log out of your own eye. Then you'll be able to see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." I mean, it's easy to spot these tendencies in other people, but how much harder is it to see them in ourselves? Before we go condemn somebody else, it'd be healthy for us to practice a little self-examination to determine, am I guilty of this same flaw? Now, each of these, I kind of alluded to this earlier, but each of these four behavioral patterns reflect a problem in our inner selves. Okay, they flow out of something that is broken on the inside. In Matthew 15, Jesus was questioned about the various rules about diet and sanitation that a lot of his fellow Jews followed, which his disciples did not. And many first century Jews stridently avoided certain foods, certain situations, even certain people, because they, in their minds, they didn't want to be contaminated with uncleanliness. That these just being exposed to these things would render them spiritually and morally unclean, and so therefore they could not participate in worship. They couldn't approach God. Well, in Matthew 15, verses 16 through 20, Jesus warned that true uncleanliness comes from the inside. Jesus said, "Are you still lacking in understanding also? Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is eliminated? But the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications," which is sexual immorality, "thefts, false witnesses, slanders. These are the things which defile the man. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man." So it's not necessarily what goes into us that renders us unclean. It's the stuff that spews out of us that shows that there's something not right on the inside. And apart from Jesus, every one of us have those things in our lives to some extent. As the prophet Jeremiah warned us, the heart is more deceitful than all else, and it's desperately sick. Who can understand it? Now, these days it's very common to hear people give advice and say, just follow your heart. I've said before, that is the absolute worst advice you can give anybody. Because your heart will lie to you nearly every time. Because our hearts are flawed. They're corrupted by sin, by our pride, by sometimes there's trauma or pain in our life, and we try to cover that up, and we try to hide from, we try to put forth a false image to keep other people from seeing that, and that leads to all kinds of issues. Or we try to keep God at arm's length and not let God see who we are. I got news for you. God knows your heart more thoroughly than you do. He already knows the ugly stuff that we try to hide from everybody else. A lot of these foolish behaviors flow from hearts that are unrepentant, unredeemed, and unchanged by God's grace. Here's the thing. Our inner selves can only be transformed by Christ. You got to come to the great physician and let him do some heart surgery on you. If we want to be free of these behaviors in our own hearts, we start by agreeing with Christ and asking him to change our hearts. The Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 17, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creature. The old things have passed away. Behold, new things have come." Now, that doesn't mean that when we enter a relationship with Christ that all of our old temptations and sinful behaviors automatically go away. Okay, that is a misunderstanding there. It's just not like, okay, I'm following Jesus now, I'm perfect. No, no, no. What it does mean is that we are no longer defined by those things or enslaved by them. We now have access to his resources to help us escape those things. I saw an interesting interview this week with a pastor who was very, very open about his struggles with same-sex attraction. And right now, some people are going, some people ask, how can a true Christian, let alone a pastor, struggle with that? The answer is the same way a true Christian can struggle with things like lust, gluttony, and pride. Sin is sin. And don't you tell me that you don't have any temptations, because lying's a sin too. The difference is this particular pastor is choosing to pursue Christ rather than practice his temptations. He is saying, Jesus is more important to me than any satisfaction, fulfillment I get from going down this other path. And so he chooses to follow Jesus instead. He's choosing to be defined by his identity in Christ rather than by his desires. Now that's a very vivid illustration, because it's one that most of us, you know, are revolted by, because we don't have to suffer with that. But like I said, we all have our own temptations. And it works the same way for us. No matter what your button is, no matter what your flaw is, you will not find release until you want Jesus more than you want whatever that is. And it's a process of walking in faith day by day by day. And sometimes you stumble. You trip up. You slide a few steps back. But you keep your eyes fixed on Jesus, and you get back up and you keep following him. One of the promises wrapped up in the predictions about Jesus coming was the promise of inner transformation. According to the prophet Ezekiel, God promises his people, "Then I will sprinkle clean water on you and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. Moreover, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances." As we pursue a faith relationship with Christ, he begins to transform our hearts and reprograms our minds towards godliness. As Paul wrote in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, "Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, living in holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship." A lot of times we think, well, what we just did a few minutes ago, we're all singing, that's worship. That's only a part of worship. Real worship is yielding yourself over to God. He says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." Just three things about that real quick. Paul describes a transformation that is grounded in the recognition and acceptance of what God has done for us through the life, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. In other words, the mercies of God. By the mercies of God, this is the basis for that. And this transformation requires us to yield ourselves over to God in faith, to present our bodies a living and holy sacrifice. And this transformation is an ongoing process that results in God's glory being displayed in us. He says, "What this as we are are being transformed, as our minds are being renewed, then we are revealing what the will of God is. Some of you may be familiar with the name Jim Elliot. Jim Elliot was a missionary back in the 50s. He's famous for this saying, "He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." Elliot believed those words. In fact, he demonstrated that he believed those words by actually sacrificing his life in the attempt to reach a dangerous tribe in the Amazon. And a lot of times we think of it in that context of, oh, I gotta, you know, sell everything I have and do these great things for Christ to take that great leap of faith. But there's really a very practical aspect of this, okay, that ties in with what we've been talking about for the last 30 minutes. God may not be calling you to the Amazon, but he does call you to godliness. So stop being a fool. Quit living as if God doesn't exist or like his words don't matter. Acknowledge how the mess you're in came about and the part you played in it. And accept the help that Christ offers you to transform your heart and to make it whole. Take up the invitation to follow Jesus and find yourself on the path to a happier, healthier you. Because if any man is in Christ, he is a new creation.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.